This week on the Writer's Detective Bureau, ruses, brought in for questioning, and recording gaps. I'm Adam Richardson, and this is the Writer's Detective Bureau. Welcome to episode number 62 of the Writer's Detective Bureau, the podcast dedicated to helping authors and screenwriters write professional quality crime-related fiction. And this week, I'm answering your questions about when cops are allowed to lie, what it really means when you're brought in for questioning, and what happens when there are gaps in the recording of an interrogation. But before we get into that, as always, I need to thank my Gold Shield patrons, Deborah Dunbar from DeborahDunbar.com, Cece Jamison from CeceJamison.com, Larry Keaton, Vicky Tharp of VickyTharp.com, Dharma Kelleher of DharmaKelleher.com, Chris Ann, Jimmy Coe of CrimiBox, and Larry Darter for their support. I'd also like to thank all of my Coffee Club patrons for their support every single month. Your support keeps the lights on in the Bureau, and you can find links to all of the writers supporting this episode in the show notes at writersdetective.com/62. And to learn about setting up your own Patreon account for your author business, visit writersdetective.com/Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. So before I get started with any questions, I have to tell you, I love how responsive the Bureau is. You guys are awesome. I received some great feedback about episode 60, specifically about where I talked about lying in the bad cops section. And I need to clarify something. There are times when cops are allowed to lie, and there are many landmark decisions that clarify when this is permissible. So when I was talking about not tolerating lying, I was specifically talking about, now, number one, on the stand, or anytime you're providing testimony or a sworn affidavit, like when you're swearing out a search warrant or an arrest warrant. And yeah, even in writing a police report, especially when it comes to what you personally did or saw as a police officer. Police reports are never going to be perfect, and when errors arise in a police report, it's usually the result of statements given by the people being interviewed. So we write our reports based upon what we believe to be true at the time. So if a witness or a victim lies to us, that lie is going to end up in the police report. But under no circumstances should an officer knowingly put false information into a report. And number two, in any official capacity within your department or chain of command, like in reporting to your supervisors or filling out your time card. And I say official because we're still talking about a workplace here. If we're planning a surprise birthday party for a coworker, I'm not going to be the party pooper. I'm going to lie right to his face when he asks what I'm doing this weekend, just like any of us would really do. But if it turns into something official, like whether I'm available to respond in to work, then sorry, buddy. I'm not going to be making it to your party anyway. All right, so let's talk about when we can lie or use a ruse. Let's get this first urban myth out of the way right now. I do not have to tell you I am an undercover cop. Now, I'm not allowed to entrap you, meaning I'm not allowed to entice you into committing a crime you had no intention of committing. I can't plant that seed. But if we're sitting at a bar and having a friendly conversation and you confide in me that you murdered someone, or you trust me to become a drug dealer for you, then no, I can definitely lie about my identity. And yes, lie about my being a cop. Now, next, much more commonly, I can legally use a ruse, which is legalese for pull some shenanigans in an interview or an interrogation. The U.S. Supreme Court landmark decision Frazier versus Cupp, C-U-P-P, in 1969 and in subsequent case law allows for voluntary confessions to be admissible in court, even if deceptive tactics were used to obtain those confessions. So I can lie to you and tell you that your coworker told me what you did when in fact I haven't talked to her. I can tell you I have your fingerprints at a crime scene when I really don't. I can tell you that your co-conspirator is in the next interview room giving you up for your role in the robbery, even if we haven't really found him yet. And I've talked before on this podcast about using strategy in an interrogation. So if I'm going to use this ruse, this bluff, I have to be damn sure it's not going to backfire. If this really is the guy, and I tell him I have his fingerprints, but he knows he wore gloves, then he knows I'm lying, and that this whole interview is just a fishing expedition. It means my interview just died, because I revealed that it's a bluff. But sometimes, that bluff is all we have. Strategy aside, the biggest legal limitation to using a ruse or deceptive tactics to get a voluntary confession is that the lie cannot be something that would coerce or compel an innocent person to falsely confess to a crime. There is significant case law that lays out examples of what crosses that coercion line and what doesn't, and I won't turn this into a constitutional law class citing 50 years of decisions. But the bottom line is that we can't be so bold with our tactics as to, quote, shock the conscience of the court. We also have to be careful not to create any false props for our ruse that might become mistaken as evidence. The Florida case State versus Kayward was a case where a man was accused of raping and murdering his 5-year-old niece, and the police fabricated a false lab report that claimed his DNA was found on her underwear. The courts found that this verbal lie was okay, but creating the false document was not lawful. That was crossing the line, because the courts feared that this fabricated lab report might mistakenly be entered into evidence. Various courts have ruled differently on the issue of fabricated documents as to whether they should or shouldn't be admissible. In some courts, you know, feeling that a written lie isn't much different than a verbal one. But if your characters start heading down this path in your story, use caution, or at least your characters should use caution, rather. Like any lie in life, think twice before you tell it. Even if it's legal, it may not be the smartest thing to do or even the most ethical. Besides, no one wants to become a household name because they had a court case go all the way to the Supreme Court, especially if finding justice for a severe crime like rape or murder hangs in the balance. Barb Goffman of barbgoffman.com asked this in the Facebook group. I've heard in some states a person can be held without being arrested for a certain time period, perhaps 24 hours, for questioning. Can they in fact be brought in for questioning? While I know the person doesn't have to answer questions without an attorney, is the information about being brought in for questioning correct? It's been my understanding that if the police ask someone to come in for questioning, unless the person is under arrest, the person can say no. But can the police compel the person to come in without being under arrest under any circumstances, such as if the witness is material? Can the police compel that person to stay for a limited time period? Or is that all just fiction? Great question, Barb. And I know I answered this in the Facebook group a little bit, but I'm going to expand on it for everyone listening. The simple answer is no. The only real way to compel the witness to give a statement is through subpoenaing them to testify, like at a preliminary hearing. Doing so, however, might backfire, strategically speaking, on the prosecutor, though, as the prosecutor can't anticipate what the witness will testify to. Prosecutors are like detectives in this way. They really, really prefer to know the answer to the question before they ask it, or at least have some sort of inkling as to where the answer might lead to. Real-life courtroom testimony is rarely like the climax of a Perry Mason episode. Did I just show my age right there? I should mention that there is technically such a thing as a criminal deposition in some states, but that wouldn't likely be used either. as those are meant for preserving testimony in a case where a witness is unlikely to be available to testify during a trial, like if they are gravely ill. Criminal depositions are not used as fishing expeditions the same way that civil depositions are used. And to be completely honest, I've never heard of a criminal deposition being used in any situation other than a key witness being on their deathbed. Reality is that 99.9% of the time, the police just deal with the fact that people won't talk to them. It doesn't mean we won't reach out another day to ask again, but we really can't compel anyone to talk to us. Truth be told, witnesses refusing to talk to the police are one of the biggest investigation hindrances we run across in any jurisdiction across the board. This is especially true in the more socioeconomically depressed communities where there is a severe distrust of the police and true fear of retaliation, especially if that crime is gang-related. There is a saying that snitches get stitches, but most believe that stitches would be the least of their problems. So as the police, we're keenly aware that even the appearance of helping the police, like standing at that person's doorway for an extended period of time, can put a potential witness at risk. Often, they're just not even going to answer the door. So what do? We tuck a business card in the door jamb and just hope that they will call if they know anything. As for being brought in for questioning, if you are not free to leave, that means the police have the probable cause required to make an arrest. Doesn't mean they're going to, but it means that they at least have enough probable cause to do so. And as retired police officer Robert Alvarez mentioned in our Facebook group, whether you are technically arrested or not doesn't really mean anything to the person being detained. If you aren't free, you aren't free. Also, it's important to know that the time limit isn't about being allowed to question someone for that long. It's about how long the police have to file charges against the person versus being forced to let them go. And as I mentioned in the previous section about ruses and coercion, holding someone in an interview room for 24 or 48 hours and questioning them the entire time is a very different scenario than putting them in a holding cell with access to a toilet, a bed, or a phone while the decision is made to formally charge them are two very different stories. In reality, if you have probable cause to detain them, so in this case, bring them down to the station to interview them where they're not free to leave, so we're talking about a custodial interrogation here, then the first thing I do or have to do is read them their rights. If he immediately lawyers up, says he wants his attorney, then we're done talking. In fact, I mean, realistically, we never got an interview. So now the question is, do we formally arrest him? Which, by the way, starts the clock on filing charges in court. Or do we release him? There's no real benefit to hanging on to him for 24 hours just to cause an inconvenience. And if you intentionally toe that legal line, you're inviting more opportunities for personnel complaints, frivolous lawsuits, and scrutiny from the courts, and certainly the defense attorneys. We are far better off kicking the guy loose as soon as we make the decision not to arrest him. So thank you so much for your question, Barb, and for being part of the Facebook group. You can find Barb at barbgoffman.com. Chris Moody of chrisamoody.com writes, on a few podcasts I've listened to where the host is trying to research whether the person doing time is actually guilty of the crime they were found guilty of, one thing seems to have happened a few times. Either detectives will start questioning the person without recording, or they will stop recording for a few moments and then resume recording. Am I correct that both of these are always illegal? If it did happen, what would someone legally be allowed to do? Chris, you might be surprised to know that none of that is illegal. In fact, interviews do not have to be recorded. I'm pretty sure that the FBI still has the standard operating procedure of not recording interviews, not even audio-only recordings. As far as I know, it's still the same way, where the FBI's SOP is for two agents to conduct the interview with one of them taking copious notes. That said, in this day and age of recording devices everywhere we turn, and that we are arguably living through the lowest point of public perception toward law enforcement in modern American history, should we be recording everything? Oh man, you betcha. So here's the distinction, Chris. When a statement is recorded on audio or video, that can be entered as its own evidence. It's the best evidence rule applying here. So the jury will most likely get to hear the witness, that victim or suspect, whomever it is on that recording, say these things in their own words, right? So if there's an audio recording of an accused murderer saying he killed the victim, that's some solid evidence that's pretty tough to refute. And it's something the jury can rely upon when it comes time to come to a verdict. Prior to WAV files, burnable CDs, cassette recorders, or even reel-to-reel tapes, police interviews and interrogations were still a thing. So it was a matter back then of he said, she said, and it was up to the jury to figure out who was more believable, the police detective or the defendant. And as the Innocence Project routinely reveals, sometimes the jury convicted people of crimes they didn't commit. So is this he said, she said the best practice for modern day police interviews and interrogations? Obviously not. And having gaps in the tape of an interrogation probably won't bode well for the detectives having to testify as to what transpired while the recorder was off. Just ask Nixon about that. But the reality is that there may be legit reasons why this happened. Like the police station still uses audio cassettes, and maybe the admission happened while the auto reverse function kicked in, going from A side to B side. Okay, I fully admit I'm totally showing my age this episode. Okay, or perhaps the DVR ran out of room, or the internet connection to the cloud went down. Hopefully that makes me sound younger. But my point here is that anything that looks suspicious with the recording is going to have to be explained through testimony, which also means it's something the defense would be much more successful at attacking and bringing into question both the detective and the interview or interrogation, which means it may actually work against the prosecution's case much more than if the tape had just kept on rolling. But no, the short answer, Chris, is there's nothing illegal about not recording an interview. And thanks so much for the question, Chris. Again, you can find Chris's work at chrisamoody.com. I'm going to keep bugging you. You got to do something about those easy to guess passwords you keep using over and over. I'm going to be that little bug in your ear. So check out LastPass for free or upgrade to LastPass Premium for $3 a month. Just go to writersdetectivebureau.com/LastPass. Thank you so much for listening this week. If you're doing NaNoWriMo this year, and if you aren't aware, November is National Novel Writing Month, then happy Preptober. Let's get your crime fiction story preparation questions answered. Send them to me by going to writersdetective.com/podcast. Thanks again for listening. Have a great week and write well.